Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Infamous by Minerva Spencer, narrated by Heather Wilds. Chapter 1. The Duke of Stanford's Ballroom, London, 1818.
Quit yanking on your cravat, Richard. You look as though you've been mauled by those beetles you're so bloody fond of,
Lucian said under his breath. Richard laughed. Thank you, Luce. I can always count on you to give me the words with the bark still on them. Lucian's cheeks darkened. Sorry. Richard couldn't help noticing that his twin's eyes were in constant motion as he searched the swelling crowds for something, or someone, and Richard could guess who.
I don't mean to be an ass, Rich, Lucian said. It's just...
I know, I know. It's a burden to have a barnacle like me stuck to your side. Richard patted his brother's shoulder. Lucian snorted.
Idiot. Fool.
They both grinned. Richard squinted around at the multitude of people packing the receiving area of the Duke of Stanford's townhouse. Remind me why I'm here again? He asked his far better dressed, more attractive, and more gregarious identical twin. So, identical in theory. In addition to the spectacles Richard wore, and his brother did not, Richard was a good stone and a half lighter than Lucian, who'd filled out in the chest and shoulders in a way Richard hadn't quite managed yet. And then there were the spots that had plagued them both from age 14. Lucian's had magically disappeared when he'd turned 17, but Richard's were only now clearing. Yes, identical, but different. Richard smirked at the thought.
You're here for the girls,
Lucian reminded him, somehow able to speak while smiling. A new skill, and something that must have been on the curriculum at Eton those last 2 years. The two Richard had skipped, instead going straight to university. Richard snorted. Yes, because all the girls were so impressed by the way I trod upon... He made a frustrated tisking sound.
The devil. I can't even recall the poor girl's name. Nobody remembers that incident except you, Lucian said.
Well, and likely her.
I don't recall her name either. You need to stop thinking that nobody likes you, Rich. If you just put yourself out a bit, you'd see.
Richard could not believe his twin could be so oblivious of the insults, mocking names, and even an ode that had circulated about Richard this season. He could only think that Lucian was so insensible because he was falling deeper in love by the hour and could see nothing other than one spectacularly beautiful face, whether she was in the room or not.
And,
Lucian added,
if a room full of pretty women isn't enough reason to be here, remember your promise to Mama.
Oh, that's hitting below the belt, he muttered. Lucian merely smirked. Unfortunately, what his brother said was true. If Richard hadn't, in an extremely weak moment, promised their mother to stick it out for one season, he could have been tramping the Fenlands and adding to his already considerable beetle collection. But their mother, Baroness Ramsay, had chosen the perfect time to corner him. Just after he and Lucian had returned from a year of unfettered hedonism on the continent, and he had foolishly capitulated. So here he was. Thank God it was getting near the end of the season, because he wasn't sure how much more tomfoolery he could bear. In Richard's opinion, a London season was remarkably like a term at Eton, but with the girls to join in the mockery. Richard sighed and scanned the crowd, and then immediately wished he hadn't, because dead ahead was Sebastian Fanshawe, the Duke of Dowden, and Richard's chief tormentor from Eton.
Good Lord,
he muttered beneath his breath, turning so that the other man mightn't see him. Dowden hadn't changed a whit in the almost 3 years since Richard had last seen him. He was still the physical embodiment of male perfection, tall, broad-shouldered, golden-haired, and blue-eyed. And he still had the same punishing wit and barbed tongue. It didn't matter what Richard did or said, Dowden would abuse him. And only the two of them knew the reason why. The names, digs, and even a snide ode that some wit had composed about him didn't bother Richard any more now than they had at school. That said, it was a damn shame that Dowden had so much influence over the ladies, especially over one girl in particular, Miss Celia Trent.
Just thinking Miss Trent's name gave Richard a heavy feeling in his groin. An unfortunate development, with the potential to embarrass him right here in the middle of the Duke of Stanford's ballroom, if Richard wasn't careful. He wasn't the only bloke who suffered such a physical reaction to the woman's sensual, almost overripe beauty. But he was the only man in the room whose twin was madly in love with her. Richard felt like a dirty dog about the way his body reacted to the woman his brother hoped to marry. But he was a human animal in his prime breeding years, and he could hardly control his body's reaction to such stimulus. Could he? But he could control his behaviour, and so he behaved respectfully and with reserve toward the object of his lust and his brother's love. Not that his actions mattered to Miss Trent, since she seemed to have taken an aversion to Richard before they'd even met. Lucien leaned close to him and said, "I'm going to speak to Celia's father tomorrow." Richard groaned. "Why do you feel that you have to marry her, Luce? Just because you kissed her?" Lucien hissed. "Would you keep your bloody voice down?" He glanced around, as if anyone else cared about their conversation. "You know I've been thinking about it for weeks now, long before the kiss."
"Yes, but you only started mentioning marriage since that irritating lawn party a few days ago, which was also the same day..."
"Yes, yes, you already announced that. Thank you very much. It so happens that that particular issue is what made the matter, pressing."
"Why?"
Lucien rolled his eyes.
"You know why."
"I don't, actually. It's not as if you ruined her." Richard snorted at the words. "Ruined her," he repeated. How stupid and dramatic that sounds. Have you ever given any thought to that phrase and what it means? As if she were some sort of object, like a plate that you dropped and ruined because it's now broken. It's not as if kissing, or even sexual intercourse, can only happen one time. So how can you ruin a woman by having sex with her? I have sex with delightful regularity, and yet nobody says that I am ruined.
Lucien was staring at him in a familiar way. Richard could almost predict his brother's next words.
"What is wrong with you?"
"What?" he asked, when Luce only stared.
"Mother must have dropped you on your head. That is all I can think of to account for it."
"Besides," Richard continued, ignoring the tired insult, "I saw her after you kissed her. I can tell you, without equivocation, that she most certainly did not appear ruined. Perhaps you should think on it a few days."
"I don't want to. There have to be dozens of men soliciting her father for her hand."
Richard wanted to ask why they'd do so if she was so clearly ruined, but kept that unhelpful question to himself. Instead, he said,
"Maybe some of them have also..."
One dangerous look from Lucien's narrowed eyes froze the rest of the words in his throat. Instead, he soothed his twin.
"Even if there are 100 men, none of them can be more eligible than you. Indeed, you possess the only thing Trent is looking for in a son-in-law, lots and lots of brass. Even I, as woefully ignorant of ton gossip as I am, know the man is below the hatches." He smirked. "In fact, if Miss Trent knocks you back, her father will probably marry you himself."
"Very droll." Richard could see his brother wasn't listening.
"Are you sure about this, Luce? You've hardly had a chance to live life or explore the world. We had a smashing time on our trip, didn't we?"
"Yes."
"Well, don't you think..."
"I love her." Lucien's voice was low and firm. "Love."
Richard rolled his eyes and heaved a sigh at the ridiculous word. It was his contention that human beings were not designed for monogamy. He strongly suspected what his brother was feeling was really lust. Even if he did credit love as actually existing, he doubted that a person could fall in love with somebody when allowed no more than a few minutes a week to chat with the object of his desire. Richard considered trying to tell his brother that it was his breeding imperative that was driving him to distraction and sending him to Miss Trent's father's house tomorrow, hat in hand. But that was a subject on which his mother had told him he must be circumspect.
"People don't like being compared to ducks or beetles or horses, Richard. You must reserve your observation on man's biology for those who can appreciate and understand them."
Lucien was not one of those people, so there was no point in arguing. Besides, Richard could understand his brother's fascination, if not love, for Miss Celia Trent. Before meeting Miss Trent, Richard had believed that all healthy, attractive, unattached females under the age of 40 were largely the same, which was to say, desirable. He'd never felt his brother's brand of madness for one woman in particular. But one look at Miss Trent's gorgeous face, voluptuous body, and lively blue eyes had turned him into a gaping fool, just like every other man, married or single. The male populace's reaction to this one woman was laughable, really, because as attractive as Miss Trent was, there were dozens and dozens of other women who went unnoticed, while the men of the ton clamoured like a pack of hounds after a single female. He had observed the same thing in the animal kingdom, or at least as much of the animal kingdom as he'd had the opportunity to study in his few years. To his way of thinking, people were no better than the gaggle of geese that roamed Lessing Hall, his parents' country home, terrorizing the populace, both human and animal. Every year, for as long as Richard could remember, the two dominant ganders, Wellington and Salt, had warred over a white tufted goose named Harriet. The two males would defeather each other and end up battered and bloody in their determination to have Harriet. Meanwhile, dozens of perfectly fine geese went unbred. Richard glanced around the ballroom that lay below them. Yes, the same thing was true here, except not geese, of course, but hundreds of perfectly breedable young women, a great many of whom were hiding in corners, while only a handful were chosen to dance time and time again. Slave to his animal impulses that he was, Richard caught himself searching the room for Miss Celia Trent. He shook his head. Really, he was no better than a gander, every bit as driven to defeather all the other males in his vicinity in his pursuit of Celia Trent. No, not that. She is to be Lucy's wife. Beside him, Lucian heaved a put-upon sigh. Try not to wear that expression, Rich. Richard turned to meet Lucian's light brown eyes, identical in colour to Richard's, although only half the size, since they weren't magnified by spectacles, and found his brother frowning. What expression? The one you're wearing right now. The receiving line inched forward. I'm sorry, but you'll need to be a bit more specific, Luce. I know your vocabulary is limited, but give it a go. You get this look, as if you're observing mankind's foibles from a lofty height. Richard snorted. It's true. And I've seen the same look when you're categorizing beetles or watching animals copulate. Richard laughed. Oh, and what look is that? Lucian's features shifted until his expression was smirky and heavy-lidded. Richard had to admit it was an expression that made him want to plant his brother a facer. I don't look like that, he objected. Not right now. Right now you look annoyed, and your eyebrow is doing that thing. Lucian sounded jealous. Richard snorted. The one thing that he could do that his perfect brother hadn't yet mastered was lifting his eyebrows independently of each other. You'd think that being well-liked, more athletic, and the Earl of Davenport would be enough for his slightly older twin. But no. Luce coveted Richard's eyebrow thing, too. I realize the expression is just a defense when you're nervous, Lucian went on, with the assurance of a person who knew Richard almost as well as he knew himself. But it makes you look like a right arrogant, suspicious. What? He asked when his brother broke off. When Lucian didn't answer, Richard followed his gaze. Lady Stephanie Powell and Miss Celia Trent had placed themselves in a position to be better observed by his brother and all the other young bucks, most of whom arrived at these affairs as late as possible. Richard knew the young woman's plumage display was for his brother rather than himself, but he enjoyed it nonetheless. Miss Trent's hourglass figure, ultramarine blue eyes and mink-coloured curls were an attractive contrast to her friend's slender blonde wholesomeness. Smile! Lucian hissed as they reached the front of the line, and he bowed over the hand of their hostess. Good evening, Your Grace, Lucian said in a suave, sophisticated, grown-up voice that Richard didn't yet possess. Good evening, Mom, Richard echoed, his voice breaking in the middle of his three-word sentence. Viscount Redvers. The Duchess spoke his name with a look of amusement on her handsome face, her gaze on Richard's cravat. Does it really look that bad? With the gauntlet of the receiving line over, they headed toward a scene that looked remarkably like the descriptions he had read of Roman gladiatorial pits. Bloody hell, he muttered, as they fought their way through the bodies. Why don't they open a door? The Regent is expected,
Lucien explained. Even Richard, who as good as lived in a cave, well, it was actually shared lodgings off Sydney Street, knew the Regent had a pathological fear of fresh air.
"Davenport, old man," someone ahead of Lucien called out.
"Beaky,"
Lucien replied, grinning at his best mate.
"Hello there, Redvers. Didn't expect to see you here,"
Viscount Beekman said.
"I needed to use a bloody pitchfork to get him here,"
Lucien said, looking in the direction where Miss Trent had last been spotted. But it was impossible to see more than a wall of people in either direction, and none of them was Celia Trent.
"Could I grab you for just a tick, Davenport? I've got that thing to ask you about."
Lucien frowned.
"Thing?"
Beaky gave Richard a significant look.
"You know, the thing."
"Ah, yes, that thing,"
Lucien said, comprehension dawning, casting a last yearning look toward the ballroom.
"But I've not got terribly long. No, no, it shan't take but a minute. Let's go over to the card room. A man can hardly hear himself think in here."
Luce grabbed Richard's shoulder.
"Don't sneak off the minute I turn my back,"
he warned him, then pushed his way into the sea of bodies. Richard sighed. Here was the beginning of yet another long, tedious evening. Celia watched the two brothers leave the receiving line and then disappear into the crowd.
"It is difficult to credit that they're supposed to be twins,"
Stephanie said to Celia, not bothering to lower her voice. Millie Bowles, standing on Steph's other side, tittered and leaned toward them, employing her fan to cover her mouth, but actually raising her voice.
"It's difficult to believe they're even brothers, not to mention identical twins."
"Oh, look, there's Phyllida Singleton," Steph said, her glorious green eyes fixed on a slender dark-haired girl, greeting several of the other homely, impoverished, or otherwise unpopular wallflowers, who were clustered together in a corner.
"Is that the same shabby yellow ball gown she wore to the Kittredge, Oldham, and Acton balls?"
Milly asked with an avid smirk.
"I doubt she owns three identical shabby yellow ball gowns,"
Celia said sharply, earning a hurt look from Milly and an amused one from Steph.
"What's wrong with you tonight, Celie?"
Steph asked.
"You're in a positively savage mood."
"Nothing."
That sounded too curt, so she added,
"I'm just not interested in chattering about people who aren't even worth a moment of my time, like Phyllida Singleton."
Her words caused more tittering, and she knew the verbal cut would make its way to Phyllida's ears before the evening was over. Well, so be it. The unfortunate female should appreciate getting any attention, even if it was cruel. Some part of Celia's mind cringed at her appalling thoughts and words, but she shoved her qualms aside with practiced brutality. Celia let the other two women sharpen their claws on Phyllida as she caught sight of a familiar pair of broad shoulders and a golden head, and just as quickly lost sight of Lord Davenport when he disappeared in the direction of the card room, leaving his brother to stand alone. Something about the sight of Richard Redvers just standing there made her jaws clench. Rather than appear anxious or self-conscious, he surveyed the denizens of the ballroom from his taller-than-average height, with the confidence of a general observing a conquered battlefield. Didn't the man care that he was the butt of so many ton jokes? Lily Kendall drifted up to their group.
"Did you see who Lord Davenport brought with him again?"
"We already saw,"
Millie confirmed.
"Why does he bother?"
Lily muttered.
"I've never seen such a lump in my life. He asked Maria Trevelyan to dance at Lady Warnock's ball, and the poor thing couldn't think of a way to avoid it. He trod on her skirt and ripped off most of the flounce, taking part of the skirt with it. I heard he ripped off so much that she was almost naked."
They all twittered over the well-worn piece of gossip. Celia studied the man in question. He appeared to be staring blankly at the dance floor, his thick spectacles glinting under the light of several hundred candles, looking as if he'd fallen asleep while standing up. Speaking objectively, Richard did look like his brother, but his appearance was like Lucien Redvers' reflection in a warped mirror, with spots, although she'd noticed those had begun to fade. He was just as tall, but gawky, too slender, and his clothing was a disgrace, rumpled and without any style. His lips appeared thinner than Lord Davenport's full, sensual mouth, a mouth more than one young lady had sighed herself to sleep over, but
but Celia suspected that was due to the odd smirk he seemed to wear in repose. He stood alone, and appeared unconcerned as humanity washed around him, like the incoming tide rushing around rocks on the shore. Celia envied him that, the ability to be comfortable in his own skin. If she was standing all alone like that, she'd have developed hives all over her body by now. That's why she made every effort to ensure she was never in his position. Almost as if he'd heard her thoughts, he turned in her direction. His expression was lofty and contemptuous, as if he were examining one of his beetles. No, not that, she corrected. Because if he were doing that, he'd probably look interested. Instead, he was looking at her as if she were a bluebottle fly or some other common insect that wouldn't merit a second of his time. Perhaps he's correct in his assessment, Celia. After all, what is interesting about you other than your looks? Ah, touché. She mentally congratulated the inner voice that critiqued her every thought and action. Is he a simpleton, do you think? Millie asked in her piercing voice. If you don't keep your voice down, he might think you are interested, and you will be his next dance partner, Celia said coolly. Millie flushed, but the others chuckled. What? Are you suddenly feeling sorry for him? Steph demanded, her eyes slyly flickering in the direction of Lucien, who emerged from the card room. I'm not. But that doesn't mean I want to make a spectacle of myself. Millie's eyes became glassy at the implied criticism, her chin quivering. Celia wanted to stop talking about Richard Redvers. In fact, she'd like to forget the man altogether. No, what you want is to forget your horrid behaviour toward him these past months. Fine, I would like to forget that too, but it wasn't my intention that mocking Richard Redvers would become everyone's amusement of choice. It wasn't your intention, but you did everything in your power to make it happen. Celia was sick and tired of arguing with her conscience. A battered, bruised, and malnourished thing that refused to die no matter how badly she abused it. Besides, the accusation wasn't fair. While Celia might have spread the rumours and planted the barbs, it was Sebastian who'd conceived of them. The Duke of Dowden started it, but you fanned the flame, Celia. Another truth. Sebastian had been relentless. His quips and slights and comments were cunning and cruel, and spread like wildfire. He was so adept at sowing lies that most people never guessed they came from him or her. At least Celia hoped none of the people around them, with the exception of Steph and Sebastian, ever connected her with any of the cruelty this season. Part of the reason that Celia had joined in the baiting was the same as everyone else's, to make sure that she didn't become the butt of Sebastian's rapier-sharp wit. But more importantly, she'd done everything that Sebastian told her to do, because she knew he could wreck her. He had told her he would. You want to become Countess of Davenport, my girl, and there is no need to deny it. But even with a face that could launch 1,000 ships, you won't be able to land the handsome young Earl without some help. You'll need invitations to the finest events. Sebastian had given her a smile that could probably launch no small number of ships itself. But wasn't that how it was in nature? Often the most beautiful creatures were also the deadliest. Celia had returned his pleasant, utterly empty smile. What makes you think I can't secure such invitations on my own? The Duke had grinned, exposing his pointed canine teeth.
Oh, my dear, sweet, innocent girl.
It would take so very little to ensure that the only ballroom you ever see the inside of is a public assembly room. Celia had been too stunned to reply.
Don't ruffle your feathers, my lovely. I will guarantee you entrance to every single function of any note. All I want in return is a little assistance.
I don't understand. What can I do that would possibly help you in any way?
You can do whatever I tell you.
And that had been the beginning of it all. Celia had become part of Sebastian's inner circle, an esteemed but not particularly comfortable position to occupy. A person needed a long spoon to sup with such a dangerous man. Even his ex-lovers, gossip suggested, suffered when Sebastian was finished with them. The Duke of Dowden was wealthy, gorgeous, and had evaded matchmaking mamas for almost 5 years, and,
for reasons of his own, reasons she'd never inquired about, had a vehement hatred for Richard Redvers. Once Celia had agreed to Sebastian's demands, not that she'd ever had any choice, he had made good on his promise, somehow managing to get her invitations to parties and balls and routs and 100 other affairs she would never have attended without his connections. And all she'd needed to do was spread a bit of mischief. And create a bit yourself. Don't forget that. Celia winced at the reminder of the vicious ode to Odious she'd written, which made it painfully clear who Odious was meant to be. Other than Sebastian, only Steph knew who'd written it, and that had been by mistake. Celia should never have told the sly beauty anything private. She knew that Lady Stephanie had befriended her for 2 reasons, and neither one because she actually liked Celia's company. First, she wanted to be seen associating with the only woman who could compete with her physical beauty. And second, she was Sebastian's cousin and did whatever Sebastian wanted. So Steph had become Celia's bosom companion, and the two of them had served up a constant buffet of cruel gossip with a smile. Had Celia sacrificed Richard Redvers, Phillida Singleton, and dozens of others like them on the altar of her own ambition? "You know you have, Celia. But I'll make it all up to Richard when we're sister and brother. And how is that? I'll bring him into fashion, introduce him to women who are not wallflowers. There are dozens of things I can do to help him." Her conscience enjoyed a robust laugh. Celia fumed in silence. "I've heard he's quite brilliant and went to university 2 years early." Milly's shrill voice cut through her uncomfortable thoughts. "Studying to be a vicar," Steph said with a dismissive sniff. "No, he's one of that sort who goes about collecting beetles." "Ooh!" All 4 of them shivered with disgust. "Beetles!" Millie screeched. Either the word itself or Millie's piercing voice drew a glance from the subject in question. "Oh, no, he's looking at us," Lily Kendall hissed. He appeared to be, but then his attention was caught by Phillida Singleton, who approached him with another drab-looking female. Redvers seemed to come to life, a rare smile transforming his usually inscrutable features and making him almost as handsome as his brother. "Look, he's going to ask Phillida Singleton to dance," Milly said with her penchant for pointing out the obvious. "He always does. They're perfect together. An old maid and her specky swain," Steph said. The others laughed, but Celia didn't join in. Instead, anger flared up inside her as she watched the pair. If Richard Redvers had even 1 ounce of sensibility, he would flee London and never attend another ton function. And if he disappeared, then Celia could stop. She could just stop. But he was stubborn and stupid and arrogant and insisted on remaining. And so she was driven to ever greater heights of cruelty. She needed it all to end, and end soon, or she'd go mad. "Please, God, let Lucien give me some sign tonight, some hint, and let this horrid, horrid season come to an end." "If I were you, Celia, I wouldn't be so eager to attract the Almighty's attention." Once again, Celia had to admit the truth of such moralizing cautions. Given her behavior, she was far more likely to attract punitive lightning bolts than divine benedictions. All 4 of them watched in silence as Richard Redvers led the plainly gowned wallflower out to the dance floor. That was where Celia should be right now, on the ballroom floor, dancing. But she'd purposely kept most of her card free for Lucien, because he usually claimed 2 dances right away. But not tonight. No, tonight he'd blithely gone off to the card room and left her here. Left her to watch his brother and Phillida Singleton enjoying themselves. They might be unpopular, but even a fool could see that both outcasts felt confident and loved and secure. Neither of them would ever have to worry that they'd return home one evening to find all their possessions tossed out onto the street. Celia tasted the coppery tang of blood and stopped chewing her cheek, forcing herself to breathe and relax. "You don't have the luxury of relaxing, my dear Celia. You need to take care of matters before time runs out." "What am I supposed to do? Club Lord Davenport over the head and drag him to the nearest vicar?" Her lips twitched a little at the mental picture, but the smile was short-lived. She had already jeopardized her fragile reputation by allowing Lucien to detach her from the crowds at not 1, but 3 events.
The young Earl had been a perfect gentleman the first two times, doing no more than holding her hand, his behaviour forcing Celia to all but launch herself at him the last time they'd been alone together. Even then, he'd tried to be a gentleman. "I don't want to harm your reputation," he'd protested, but not very strongly.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?